chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with an interview with Hoffman that was a CIA analyst for several years. He's often interviewed on Fox Network. And then I'm going to follow that by an excerpt from an article that Ray McGovern wrote. And this is a good example of how they're continuing to propagandize us for these foreign wars that we shouldn't get involved with. But we have, and it's a proxy war. And in fact, Hoffman says in this interview that it's a proxy war that's going on. He's the interviewer asked him, he said, the moderator said, well, aren't we at war with Russia? And he said, well, a proxy war, you know. So we're at war with Russia, it seems like. So anyway, this is Hoffman being interviewed on Fox Network.
Contributor Dan Hoffman, former CIA chief of station in Moscow. So when you heard this, what was your thought?
Well, I think Vladimir Putin is trying to change the perception of this war by illegally annexing more of Ukraine's territory. But the reality is that following Ukraine's blistering counteroffensive, Russia is in dire straits. They're in danger of losing. And this is Putin's only way to try to induce the West not to give Ukraine what they need to finish the job.
So he is calling for a draft. How will that mobilization go over among the Russian people?
So this is the first mobilization since World War II. And look, way back a few weeks ago, we all felt like nothing says that Putin's special military operation isn't exactly going according to plan here 200 plus days into the war, like having to rely on North Korea for artillery and Iran for drones. But now a mobilization, and the threat to Putin is less from the Democrat pro-liberal folk whom he's snuffed out in Russia. It's the ultra-nationalists who are wondering why Russia failed to topple Ukraine's government in the amount of time Putin said it would take, 3 days. And if the Ukrainian government, as preposterous as it is really governed by Nazis and is an existential threat to Russia, then why isn't Russia doing more to topple it? And I think that's the threat to Putin. It's his own inner circle, and it's those ultra-nationalist hawks.
We also heard today that the flights are full to leave Russia. As soon as he announces mobilization, I understand it's only the third time in Russian history, Putin also had this to say. Watch this.
Russian citizens can be sure that the territorial integrity of our homeland, our independence, and freedom will be provided. I will stress once again, with all the means at our disposal, those who try to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the wind can turn their way.
So we're about to have a speech from President Biden. He is going, we understand from John Kirby, who was here last hour, it will be a wide-ranging speech and talking about world hunger and things like that. However, this is going to be what everyone's going to pay attention to. How should Biden deal with this when Putin is ratcheting things up?
So Vladimir Putin's threats to use nuclear weapons and his demand that Ukraine not take the fight to Russian territory effectively induced the Biden administration to provide artillery with limited range, not to agree to a no-fly zone, not to allow Poland to provide the MiG aircraft. And if I were to be so presumptuous as to suggest writing a piece of President Biden's talking points, I would say, look, if Ukraine chooses to fight for its territory, no matter what Russia calls it, this is Ukraine's territory, then we will support them. And we need to continue to do that. Even if Vladimir Putin is calling Kherson and Zaporozhye and Luhansk and Donetsk parts of Russia, they're not. That's Ukrainian territory, and we should not allow Putin to prevent us from doing the right thing. So we'll see what the president says, I'm sure the president's advisors are huddling with our intelligence community right now just to assess Vladimir Putin's plans, his intentions, and the seriousness of these threats he delivered today.
Dan, I don't think anyone in this administration is going to agree to this, but are we effectively at war with Russia and Putin now?
Well, that's the way that Vladimir Putin is framing it, because how else could you explain that Russia is losing such a, you know, in a war that they claimed they could win in a short amount of time? Putin's defense minister Shoigu says that Russia's at war with the West. It's at the very most a proxy war. Look, the United States is the arsenal for democracy. The Ukrainians are fighting and dying in throughout Ukraine, and they're the ones we can owe a debt of gratitude for standing up for democracy on what is a fault line right now between Vladimir Putin's dictatorship and liberty and freedom. But we're not, you know, that's a fine line,
Dan,
and Vladimir Putin.
You would agree that these HIMARS, these rockets, have allowed Ukraine to go on the offensive without our weapons. And without the weapons of NATO countries, Ukraine would not be battling back the way they are, would they?
No, you're absolutely right about that. And so that Vladimir Putin certainly recognizes that. He may have assessed that the United States and the West would never have provided Ukraine the weapons that they needed, but we are. Now, but only to a point, Bill. We haven't gone far enough for Ukraine to actually win this, and Putin knows that. If we were to give Ukraine the artillery with a longer range, and we were provided them with aircraft, and earlier on, if we considered a no-fly zone, Ukraine might have been able to take the fight to the enemy in a speedier fashion and avoided the humanitarian catastrophe that we've witnessed in Ukraine. We talk about Ukraine winning. Look, Ukraine has lost. You know, there are millions of people who have been displaced and innocent civilians killed in this barbaric war, which needs to end with Ukraine's victory as soon as possible.
Dan Hoffman, thank you so much. Well,
thank you,
the
Dan.
Speech is just about a half hour away, so we'll check back in with you. Thank you.
Next, I'm going to play a Scott Ritter, sort of a contrarian view of what Mr. Hoffman just said. And we'll just listen to what he has to say. He's a retired Marine and well-versed in military matters. But here we go with what Scott Ritter was saying about the Russians. They're not nearly as defeated as this Hoffman fellow is depicting. Here we go next with Scott Ritter.
There's no doubt that Ukraine has launched a major counteroffensive effort in two places, one in the vicinity of Kherson in the south, the other one just south of Kharkov in the vicinity of the city of Izium. These are major efforts. Ukraine has spent the last, and you and I have had this conversation in the past, when I spoke out in April about the billions of dollars of military aid coming in and the strategic depth that was being provided, I said, this is a game changer. I mean, the fact of the matter is Russia's destroying the Ukrainian army, but NATO's reconstituting it. And what we've seen here is the reconstituted Ukrainian army being thrown into battle. The problem for Ukraine isn't the quality of these troops. These are outstanding troops. They have new tactics. They have new equipment. And they're doing quite well. The problem is there's not enough of them. You know, they struck in areas where the Russian lines are weak. You know, Russia only has 200,000 troops covering a very big battle zone. And there are certain areas where these troops are oftentimes in strong points that are separated by 1 to 5 kilometers. And they cover the distance in between with artillery fire, et cetera. But if you hit it with a strong force, a concerted force with artillery backup, you can punch a hole through there. And that's what the Ukrainians have done. Ukraine has around 700,000 troops under arms. Not necessarily, because Russia has supremacy in firepower. Russia has a better logistics support system. The Russian logistics doesn't have to come up through hundreds of kilometers of territory being bombed constantly by the Ukrainian Air Force. Ukraine's logistics is being bombed every day by Russian cruise missiles and the Air Force. And frankly speaking, the Ukrainians have suffered horrific casualties. Their officer corps has been decimated. Some estimates are that up to 60% of their pre-war officers have been killed or wounded. And the officers are that's what makes your military tick. If you have good officers,
they're continually being entangled. Thomas Jefferson said, "Don't get entangled in these foreign wars." And Ron Paul spoke vehemently against these foreign wars also. So that's what we've done now. I've got an excerpt, and it's read by a little lady in waiting here. and we're going to use her voice. We like her voice, but she's reading just a short excerpt of an article that Ray McGovern wrote just recently, and we're going to put up a click off on the entire article. Ray McGovern used to be briefing, a CIA briefing officer to several presidents, but here's what Ray McGovern has to say about the ongoing war in the Ukraine.
Brainwashed for War with Russia, by Ray McGovern, posted on September 22, 2022. Thanks to establishment media, the sorcerer apprentices advising President Joe Biden, I refer to Secretary of State Antony Blinken, National Security Advisor Jacob Sullivan, and China specialist Kurt Campbell, will have no trouble rallying Americans for the widest war in 77 years, starting in Ukraine, and maybe spreading to China. And, shockingly, under false pretenses. Most Americans are oblivious to the reality that Western media are owned and operated by the same corporations that make massive profits by helping to stoke small wars and then peddling the necessary weapons. Corporate leaders, and ivy-mantled elites, educated to believe in U.S. exceptionalism, find the lucre and the luster too lucrative to be able to think straight. They deceive themselves into thinking that the U.S. cannot lose a war. Escalation can be calibrated and wider war can be limited to Europe. And China can be expected to just sit on the sidelines. The attitude, consciously or unconsciously, not to worry. And, in any case, the lucre and luster are worth the risk. The media also know they can always trot out dyed-in-the-wool Russophobes to explain, for example, why the Russians are almost genetically driven to do evil. James Clapper, former National Intelligence Director and now hired savant on CNN. Or Fiona Hill, who insists Putin wants to evict the United States from Europe. As he might put it, goodbye, America. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
This uproar that has occurred recently is about what Putin has been saying and threatening nuclear war. Now he's saying there's a big referendum underway now in the Donbas. It's big, big turnout. Looks like they're going to vote to go and become a territorial entity of Russia. And that's our foregone conclusion, but they're really turning out in large numbers. And what Putin is saying now is that he will use tactical nuclears to defend any and all Russian territories, much less Russia proper, but he will defend any Russian territories also. So here's what he had to say recently. Here's a report about what he had to say about using nuclear. And another threat, but then some people are calling it saber rattling. I just hope it never comes to fruition.
Ukraine has been making big advances in the battlefield against Russia. The Ukrainian flag has been flying high in reclaimed territory, and President Volodymyr Zelensky visited some areas where Russian troops had retreated. Following these setbacks, Russian President Vladimir Putin escalated the rhetoric on Wednesday.
Для защиты России и нашего народа мы, безусловно, используем все имеющиеся в нашем распоряжении средства. Это не блеф.
Previously, the Kremlin said that nuclear weapons would be used only if Russia faced an existential threat. Now they said any attack on its territory could generate that kind of a response.
Putin's nationally televised speech drew condemnation from some world leaders at the United Nations General Assembly.
Putin claims he had to act because Russia was threatened. But no one threatened Russia.
It seems like the U.S. and Western countries will continue their tough approach toward Russia and aren't going to be backing down.
So here's what the West might do next and Russia's challenges as the war grinds on in Ukraine. After Putin's speech, protests broke out in multiple Russian cities and authorities detained nearly 1,000 people. The public outcry was sparked by his call to mobilize as many as 300,000 reservists.
Putin is looking at only a partial mobilization because a full mobilization in a full war risks creating unpopularity and could even endanger his rule at some point in the future. So he's trying to strike a balance between escalating the war and not doing anything that's too unpopular with the Russian people.
The mobilization order speaks to what Russian political analysts describe as Putin's tactic to double down and take risks when facing setbacks.
One of the challenges for Russia will be to integrate any new personnel from the military mobilization into the fighting force, into brigades, into forces that can succeed in Ukraine. Whether they'll succeed in that is a big question.
Russian officials have also recently announced plans to hold votes to annex four occupied regions in Ukraine's east and south.
Greetings to all people.
At the UN on Wednesday, the Ukrainian president called the referendums a sham and received a standing ovation after his speech.
The crime was committed against the values that make you and me a community of the United Nations. And Ukraine demands punishment for trying to steal our territory.
Not all world leaders at the gathering voiced full support for Ukraine in their speeches. Cuba condemned Western sanctions on Russia, while Iran blamed the U.S. for the situation in Europe.
As far as the West goes, the next steps are decisions about whether to stay the course on Ukraine, to double down and keep supporting Ukraine with weapons and other types of intelligence support.
Along with reiterating their support, some Western governments have called Russia's moves a sign of weakness and a failed strategy.
The United States wants this war to end. On just terms, on terms we all signed up for, that you cannot seize a nation's territory by force.
There may be a situation where some countries in the West or some countries around the world will be a little bit wary about escalating a conflict. Some countries could withhold military hardware. This kind of concern could make politicians and their constituents think twice about supplying so many advanced weapons to Ukraine.
Boy, it's getting dangerous out there. Next coming up are a couple of clips of Mike Adams. And this is pretty speculative. This first clip is he's repeating some rumors that we've heard for about the last week about Chinese troops possibly going into the Ukraine and different things are on the border or whatever. But he lays out some very interesting rumors, and I suggest to our listening audience to go in, take some of these rumors and try to dig down into them and try to verify them. But anyway, their first clip is Mike Adams, and he talks about these rumors. But the second clip I'm going to play is with Michael Yon. Michael Yon is a very, very, very good reporter, philosopher, traveler, a journalist that has good information, and I would really take what he's saying on the second clip to the bank. But this first clip is highly speculative, and then I'll set up the Michael Yon clip after the end of this one.
All right, welcome to this special short situation update for Saturday, September 24th, 2022. Mike Adams here. I've got a couple of things to run by you that appear to be very, very important. And also, I've got an interview that's going to be part of this podcast with Michael Yon, Y-O-N. Michael Yon, who is a war correspondent slash analyst, a world traveler, a pretty amazing individual. I interviewed him 2 days ago. As he had just finished traveling through Germany, he speaks German, and he's been to a lot of countries over the last 20, 30 years, and he reads a lot of books, including books about famine and war and pandemics and, you know, what he calls human osmotic pressure, which is waves of refugees leaving areas torn apart by war and famine and collapse and things like that. So you don't want to miss that interview. And I hope to have Michael Yon back on again soon as well. He's done some pretty amazing work. So that's coming up here shortly. Now, in the meantime, the situation has only gotten worse in terms of the worldwide risk of global warfare, nuclear war, breakdown. Let me run a couple of rumors by you here, which I normally don't like to do this until I can confirm them through more sources. However, there is some activity happening in China in particular that I think you need to be aware of. Now, let me just tell you the process that I've gone through to try to find out if this is true or not. And again, I've not been able to confirm this, but some alternative news sources are reporting that President Xi, or Dictator Xi, whatever you want to call him, is under house arrest. This is the rumor. And that 6,000 domestic flights have been canceled out of Beijing airport. Ticket sales of high-speed rail transport have also been suspended. And there is reportedly a very long military convoy that's been spotted on highways moving into Beijing. And so there is speculation that there may be, and again, this is unconfirmed, but there may be something of a military coup taking place in China right now, that maybe, you know, this, the dictator of China perhaps is being overthrown or replaced by more hardline military types. Now, the good news is that I've got people in my operation that can read Chinese, right? And even though I speak some of it, I can't read it because you have to memorize 20,000 characters. Anyway, which I have not taken the time to do. I've had some folks read the tweets coming out of China in Mandarin Chinese. And it's pretty much what I said to you, which is that this is a rumor. It's unconfirmed. Nobody knows if this is true, but there are troop movements taking place in China around Beijing right now. That part we know is true. We just don't know why. So I'm trying to either confirm or refute this. So far, haven't been able to at this hour. And I think you deserve the right to hear that this is a possibility because of other things that are happening. And let me bring in, well, a couple other things, okay? And again, some of this is unconfirmed, but it kind of matches up with what we're seeing, so I want to run it past you. First is that you saw previously that Germany, the government of Germany, declared that they were going to deploy troops, or not exactly troops, not exactly police. I don't know what the right term is, but some kind of maybe National Guard would be the closest description in our language, you know, in our terms. But Germany's deploying some kind of troops on the streets in anticipation of riots and mass social uprising because of what's happening with, you know, collapsing infrastructure, collapsing industry, which is going to lead to mass joblessness and so on. So we've already seen that officially announced in Germany. Troops on the streets of sorts. Again, not exactly military, but something close to that. Well, there are rumors circulating in the last few hours that there are thousands of troops being deployed in London right now. And Hal Turner posted a video on this, although we haven't been able to confirm that this video is from today. Sometimes people find videos that seem to be really impactful, and then you find out, oh, that was a video from 6 months ago, or that was a video from 2 years ago. So I don't know yet, but I have seen videos that appear to show large numbers of troops moving into the streets of London. So if any of you are listening from London, I would love it if you could confirm or refute this. Either way, we want to know what's happening, and you can post comments in the comment section beneath this video on Vrytown.com. Also, this video is, of course, being posted on BitChute as well as Rumble. And we've also just opened up on Band.video, which is the InfoWars website. So each of my daily podcasts are also going to be posted there, along with some other places as well. In any case, if you know what's happening, please let us know. If you have direct eyes on the streets of London, let us know what's happening, because I'm getting kind of concerned about this pattern. And it really dovetails with what I said yesterday and in my natural news story yesterday, which is that World War III has begun. It's just that the world leaders aren't telling the people. And it's very clear to me that world leaders are positioning their governments, their militaries, their cities, everything, their police forces, they are positioning for a sudden outbreak of world war, which, again, I would say it's already begun. But we're talking a massive escalation, perhaps a nuclear exchange of some kind. And I do want to talk about Russia's secret nuclear weapons here in a second. We need to talk about the Poseidon and the Skyfall, because these are two weapon systems that could be absolutely devastating to Western nations, both the UK and the United States, by the way. And both of these weapon systems exist. So we'll get to that in a second. But my point is, with 200,000 Chinese troops rumored to have been mobilized on behalf of Russia with their supplies. And I mentioned yesterday it was railroads, but I failed to mention it starts in containers. So China ships all these supplies in containers, and then the containers get put onto the railroads. And remember that Russia's railroads are wider than Western Europe's railroads. So Russia's railroads can actually handle wider loads than, you know, British trains, by the way, or even American trains for that matter. And Ukraine uses the old Russian railroad track widths, which means it has wider wheels. And so they can handle shipping containers that are just loaded without tipping over. You know, it's actually the Russian railroad system is a more stable system than the West. So China is deploying, rumored to be deploying 200,000 troops on behalf of Russia. There were also rumors that North Korea was going to send troops for some reason. I don't know if that ever panned out, but that's another rumor out there. And then Russia itself, and this is not a rumor, has initiated a partial mobilization of 300,000 troops. So, and that's mainstream media. That's been confirmed. So think about this, folks. We're talking about 500,000 troops potentially between the new Russian mobilization and the Chinese troops. 500,000 troops, which is far larger than the total number of troops that Russia even used for its special military operation. And I don't recall the exact number of that, but it was something, I think it was something in the, maybe around 200,000 or something in that range. Sorry, I don't have the exact number. But now we're talking 500,000 troops getting ready. They're not ready yet because it takes a couple of months to mobilize 300,000 reservists and get them back in the system. You know, remind them to lose a few pounds so they can fit in their old military uniforms and things like that, right? And, you know, take them out to the range and make sure they can still shoot a rifle and all the things they do. So that's going to take a couple of months. But this is ramping up. This is ramping up, and then you start to see, whoa, what's this, maybe this troop movement happening in Beijing? What's going on there? What's going on in London? What's going on in Germany? What's going on in Russia? And then also this desperation on in the United States, where the deep state is just going insane, trying to arrest and silence everybody.
Very, very interesting assertions and rumors there. And some of this could possibly be true, but go ahead and it's worth delving into and speculating on some of these issues. Next is Mike Adams with Michael Yon, Y-O-N. And he's quite an individual, Mike Yon, and his travels in the Netherlands and Germany recently. He says they're chopping down trees, getting ready for a winter in Germany for firewood. But anyway, listen to this carefully, but it's very, very insightful by Michael Yon.
Welcome to the interview today, folks. I am joined by Michael Yon. This is the first time we're getting a chance to talk with Michael Yon. He's been known as a kind of a war correspondent, but he's an analyst. He's been through Germany, much of Europe. He's been through South America. He's been at the border of the U.S. He's tracking migrant flows out of the Middle East and into Western Europe and so on. A very informed individual. He understands what's going on with food and fertilizer and all of that. I can't believe we didn't talk before, but Michael, thank you, sir. Thank you for joining me. It's an honor to have you on.
It's a great honor to have to come on your show, and I'm very happy that you have, because, like I said, about half of my readers listen to you. So everybody's saying, why don't you go on Mike Adams? So anyway,
we're making it work. Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, now we are. And so, yeah, I've been in Europe this time for about 3 months. I was down in Mexico 3 months ago and tracking the migrant flows, watching them come across into Texas and that sort of thing. And then I saw how the Dutch farmers were getting very riled up. So I jumped on the airplane and flew to Netherlands. And so for the last 3 months, I've been in, you know, Netherlands and also in Germany and Luxembourg, Belgium. I just got back from Hungary and Austria and Germany again. Just rolled in here to Amsterdam because I got to meet up with Jordan Peterson. I'm about to spend 2 days with him. Recently, I was on Jordan Peterson's show, and we did about 2 hours talking about food.
Wow.
And fertilizer and energy, something I've heard you talk about with great accuracy.
Yes.
And so after I talked about that with Jordan on his show for a couple of hours, it kind of lit a fire, and he wants to spend a couple days with me here. That's why I just rolled in, and he's flying in, and I'm going to take him out to see some farmers and that sort of thing. And so,
very cool.
As you know, the big story of our entire lifetimes, or many generations at least, would be the energy supply right now, because, you know, the energy issue is a kill shot. As you know, nitrogen-based fertilizers are largely created using the Haber-Bosch process, which you've talked about before. In fact, I was just over at the BASF plant in Ludwigshafen, Germany. BASF, I've been there twice in the last couple of months, but BASF is a huge chemical company, and they started making nitrogen-based fertilizers in roughly 1914.
Yes.
I think they started their first plant there, and it was doing, like, I don't know, 200 pounds an hour or something. I don't recall. But it was, you know, and it was based on Fritz Haber. He wrote a book on thermodynamics in 1905, describing certain chemical processes wherein he could make ammonia, right? So Fritz Haber, who later got the Nobel Prize, I think in 1918 for this, but he developed the original process. And then Karl Bosch, also a German chemist, was then hired by BASF, and Bosch took it corporate, right? So they could actually make large amounts of the fertilizer, and that's why it's called the Haber-Bosch process. And so this Haber-Bosch process.
Well, let me interject for background for those listening. This process that you're describing, Michael, feeds about 4 billion people. So without this process, half the planet would starve, literally. And that this uses hydrocarbons, the actual hydrogen that's in the ammonia molecule, NH3. The H comes from natural gas. Okay, I just want to provide that background.
Oh, yeah. And so the Haber-Bosch process is like the Suez and the Panama Canal times 10.
Yeah, this is, exactly.
This is on the criticality to the population on Earth. Most of us would not be here without the Haber-Bosch process. And so if the process of creating nitrogen-based fertilizers is seriously interrupted, then we're going to see massive famines, which is something I've been warning about since January of 2020. So this is more than 2.5 years later. I've been warning about it practically every day since January 2020.
That's amazing. You and I must have been some of the very first people to be sounding the alarm on this, because I remember, I think it was in late 2020 that I was on InfoWars, and I did a whole show on this. And a lot of people were like, what are you talking about? Why are you talking about Haber and fertilizer? I'm like, people, this is coming. Because let me offer something else. I'll turn it back over to you, Michael. But the Haber process requires, I think, 200 atmospheres of pressure, and you have to pull nitrogen out of the atmosphere. So you have to have a massive facility to do this under intense pressure and intense heat with all the hardware that goes along with that. And you have to use a lot of electricity to run that plant in order to strip, you know, the nitrogen out of the air, and in order to strip hydrogen off of the hydrocarbons. So when Germany doesn't have both natural gas and affordable electricity, you can't run this process, period. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm here. I mean, I was just over at the BASF plant, which was the original, you know, plant that started. That thing's 10 square miles, Mike. I mean, it's unbelievable.
What?
When you go in there, it's like, you know, futuristic horror movie Soylent Green is made there. So I went right by the original plant from 1914. I think it actually started in 1913, but they started producing in 14 or 15. But not that that matters, but that's still there, actually. And so I asked, as you know, Nord Stream 1 is cut off right now. And yeah. Nord Stream, you know, that feeds BASF. And there's 26 plants that create this ammonia-based fertilizer around Europe, and they're all either shut down now or mostly shut down. My guess, and it's very difficult to find accurate numbers on this, so part of this is Kentucky windage, but about 70% of it appears to be cut off. But this is a guess. It's an educated guess. Yeah.
Well, and whatever they're running on right now is stored natural gas that is not getting replenished. So there's really no plan for these plants to be able to return to normal capacity that I can tell within years.
They're not going to. I mean, you can see the writing on the wall. I mean, you clearly see things way ahead of most people. Your headlights are quite bright, you know? And I just drove from Budapest up through Austria and then all the way across Germany to get here, right? So it just took 2 days. And you wouldn't believe how much forest is being cut down. It's like so much for green. I mean, in the shadow of all these, you know, monstrous windmills, a lot of them are not even turning. They're cutting down massive amounts of German forest to stay warm this winter. I mean, it's unbelievable.
For firewood.
Yep.
And oh, wow. Now, you speak German too, don't you?
I believe it.
You speak German.
What's that, Mike? Oh, yeah, ich spreche Deutsch. I just did an interview down in Austria that was only in German. And the reason I speak German is because I was a Green Beret and I went to a language school for it in California. And then I lived in Germany 4 years and lived in Poland for 2 years. So I picked up a lot of German in the process. Yeah. So you know, when I went to Austria, they asked me if I would do an interview, which I just did about maybe 5 days ago. And it went viral by Austrian standards. And, you know, because a lot of the Austrians didn't realize it was happening, but they realized something was wrong. They knew something, but nobody had put together the Haber-Bosch, you know, all the different things, all these, like, basically, you know, there's Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, which is basically the two arteries in your neck, you know. And Nord Stream right. 2, of course, has never been opened.
Right.
And Nord Stream 1 is now completely off, right?
Yes.
And so in addition to that, Germany is just making things worse. It's like Germany's committing suicide. I mean, Germany continues to provoke Russia like by nationalizing one of their refineries a couple days ago, which there's no oil for it anyway. But it's just all these there's all these moves that Germany is making and the United States that are going to put Europe into a very cold winter. I would bet money that a lot of people are going to freeze to death in Germany this year.
Yes.
And as you know, when Germany is the powerhouse for the EU, 26 countries in the EU, which will almost certainly fall apart. I'm going to guess next year that the EU will collapse, right? Because, you know, Italy is already some of the more crass economists call them the pigs nations, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, pigs, because they're the lowest fruit on the EU resiliency scale. And Germany, and especially Germany, but also France has been keeping them afloat. But meanwhile, Germany is cutting its own throat on the energy. Nord Stream 1 is closed. Of course, Russia did it, but Germany provoked it. And because Russia wants to sell that gas. Russia is encouraged Germany many times to open Nord Stream 2 and the United States has you know told Germany not to do it and that sort of thing. But of course Trump warned years ago, as you're well aware, if you basically put your neck into Russia's noose, sooner or later they're gonna own you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, long story short, natural gas, obviously there's not enough, so Germany's draining its tanks right now, its stores. And meanwhile, Germany has said they're going to close three remaining nuclear plants, right? And so now a lot of people say, no, Germany then said they're going to keep them open again. That's true. But then Germany again after that said, no, we're going to close those and we're going to keep two of them on hot standby, which means they continue to use energy to stay hot standby, but they're not going to produce any, right? And meanwhile, they're cutting down the forest all over Germany, Poland, Romania, they're cutting down these forests and huge. I'm seeing log trucks all over the roads and just forest cleared hills as I just drove all the way across Germany. Germany is being denuded of its forest. I'm really curious what it would look like from a satellite when I just saw that from the Autobahn for 2 days, right?
Well, I'm sure the greenies must be thrilled that we're not burning coal and natural gas and that people are chopping down forests instead, right? I mean, that's very green.
Yeah, they're going to have to hug the trees before they throw them in the fireplace now they're being chopped down.
Let me bring something else in here that you're just talking about. So Germany, as of yesterday, Germany is now nationalizing their natural gas utility company called Uniper. And
that's right.
The government of Germany is pumping $8 billion into it. which is on top of 15 billion euros, which is roughly equivalent to the dollar right now, folks, if you're wondering what that equals. So that's $23 billion going into this natural gas company just to prevent it from having kind of like a Lehman-style collapse, like a too-big-to-fail collapse. But the question is, how, you know, who else does the German government have to bail out? And how much money can, I mean, how many euros can Germany just come up with? Because they have to essentially take them out of the entire European Union system. So isn't there a limit, Michael, to, you know, how many games they can play with this before it just, the music stops?
Oh, the music is definitely stopping now. In fact, I would say we're in about the last 2 months of good times in Europe for at least a generation, if not more. Wow. I mean, they're literally deindustrializing at this point.
Very, very interesting what Michael Yon had to say. There's been a recent suit filed by the Attorney General of New York against Trump and his family. And his attorney is speaking out on this already. And this is what she had to say just recently in the last few days.
Look at everything Donald Trump had to get through, huh? It was a struggle, of course, to become president. Then he's president. There's Russia, 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 impeachment number one, impeachment number two, this January 6th nonsense, a thousand other things they come at him with. And now, could this finally be it? Letitia James? I don't think so. I looked at it today. In my opinion, it's a frivolous lawsuit. They're accusing Donald Trump of overinflating his properties to get a better deal, I guess, from the banks, of more loans. They accuse him of fraud. I am not buying it. We talked about it earlier. Let's bring in Alina Haba. She is the attorney, one of the attorneys for former President Donald Trump. Welcome back, Alina.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be with you. How are you?
Uh-oh. Are you worried about this? You seem very serious. What's going on? Is this a bad...
Oh, I'm so serious. Yes, I'm so concerned. 3 years of investigation. I had no idea this was coming. And 48 days before an election. Of course, we knew this was coming. This is a typical political stunt by the DNC. Not worried at all. No,
all
not
right,
at all.
All right. So
valuations are incredibly subjective, as you know.
Right. I mean, and I don't even think, I'm not sure there's a law. And we should emphasize, this is a civil case. They tried to present it
civil.
As if it was some sort of an indictment. Do me a favor for the non-lawyers.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm happy to break it down for the non-lawyers. So Letitia James took this beautiful stage of pomp and circumstance, and she said that this was, you know, she was, we are barring the Trump Organization from doing business in New York. We are barring Donald Trump from doing business in New York. No, okay, first of all, you don't have the authority to do that. Let's be clear. This is a civil case. What is a civil case? Civil case is damages, monetary damages. Very different than a criminal case, which is you go to jail. This is a civil case. She's asking for money. We don't have a victim. Deutsche Bank made a lot of money off the Trump Organization. However, she's took the stand today. Why? Because she's down in the polls. So we sit here and we watch this, and it's a shame because she really misled the public today. I really believe that. I watched her try and pretend that my client was a fraudster and all of these things. Meanwhile, he used accounting firms. He used outside Cushman and Wakefield, major firms that went and did valuations of companies. And then his statement of financial condition was completely discredited by a four-page disclaimer where he said, basically, this is not an audit. This isn't an accounting statement. You got to do your own work and due diligence. And by the way, Deutsche Bank, they do their own due diligence. They're not a schmucky little bank from, you know, South Jersey. So sorry.
Okay. Well, look, I actually am a bit of I have a hobby. I like New York City buildings. I've always liked the skyline, and I know a little bit about what buildings cost. And when she came out and said that 40 Wall Street should only have been valued at $200 million in 2011, and I think we have a picture of the building. I knew she was wrong. I knew it. She said $200 million. Donald Trump said, apparently in the financial papers, that it was worth $524 million. I don't know if you saw earlier in the show, we showed about six buildings that sold or were valued in 2011 for that figure or more, comparable size, and some not nearly as iconic, famous, or interesting as 40 Wall Street. She does not know, literally not know what she's talking about.
No, she has no idea about commercial real estate. That is very clear by this complaint, number one. Number two, when you have a Trump property, that's a unicorn property. That's what we call that. That's something that has a brand value and has real estate value. He's got some of the best buildings in New York. So you want to sit there and tell me, oh, Trump, do you know what a property's worth? It's worth what someone's willing to pay for it. It doesn't matter what Letitia James thinks. She has no real estate background. She's literally investigating everybody and anybody. Cushman and Wakefield, Weiser Mazars. She'll go after Deutsche. She'll go after anyone to advance her political career. There is no place for that in the judicial system. And I have other clients that deal with this. If you're a Republican, if you are sitting there and you are trying to fight for your business, who happens to be successful in a Democratic state, you should not have a prejudicial judge in front of you, and you should be treated the same. But that's not the way we operate, unfortunately, in this country anymore. That's the problem. That is the problem.
I know I only have a few seconds left. There was a bogus case about the Trump Foundation. There was a settlement. I know that was bogus on their part. What do you do though? I mean, this does take up time. A lawsuit, you got to answer certain things. Yeah. Are you looking to settle? How can you settle? What's your next step? What are you going to do?
Quite honestly, all of these lawsuits that they bring, they're no surprises. We're already ready to deal with them. We've been prepared for that. We have a motion to dismiss ready, and we're going to tailor it to whatever new details they brought. But quite honestly, this has been 3 years in the making. If you don't think we knew that they were going to do this right before an election, she must think we're stupid. We were ready to go, and we will be ready to grow, and we will continue to crush it. It is what it is. It's an election political ploy. Here we go, Letitia. You know, you made a mistake. You wanted to file, but it's going to be another L in your bucket. Here we go.
Alina Haba, attorney for the President. I'm glad you're by his side, very much so. Thank you very much.
I am by his side.
All right. To be continued. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Robert Barnes speaking out about this judicial problems in this country, and that we really do have problems. Here we go with Michael, with Robert Barnes, with Alex speaking out about this. The travesty of justice that Alex and other people are experiencing.
And that is exactly what's really transpiring. And they can't talk about that. They can't talk about true school safety. They can't talk about one of the things on the very first night that Sandy Hook happened. You were talking about we should be looking at Big Pharma. We should be looking at the mental health crisis of young men in America. We should be looking at a culture that celebrates and glorifies violence amongst young men. That we should be looking at and we should be looking at school safety network. What we shouldn't be looking at is Second Amendment rights of law-abiding Americans. And they've always been outraged by that because they wanted to blame the gun rather than let the world know Big Pharma has culpability here, because the way in which young men are being medicated on some of these drugs is often backfiring and has side effects they often don't fully know about or meaningfully remediate. They don't want to talk about inadequacies of school safety because that implicated the Democratic politicians and political class in Connecticut. And they don't want to talk about culture that glamorizes violence because it's a culture they profit from. And they don't want to talk about media glamorizing these individuals that commit these horrible crimes because big media profits a lot of the pockets the cash the most from anybody. And that's why they had to blame the gun and blame Alex Jones. They couldn't blame the shooter. They couldn't blame mental health. They couldn't blame school safety. They couldn't blame Big Pharma. And they needed to continue to happen because it's the only way they'll continue to politically profit off of these school shootings. And that's what's disturbing. That's what's maybe most unsettling, is a case that's about preventing the harm from school shootings and the consequences to vulnerable parents is being used to cover up the true culpable parties for this school shooting and to falsely blame those who are trying to defend constitutional rights and liberties in America. So if we're serious about constitutional rights and liberties, we have to defend everything concerning this trial, which implicates First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, Seventh Amendment rights. They couldn't have a conscientious trial. They couldn't have a trial that comports with due process. They couldn't give you your day in court, even with a liberal Democratic Connecticut jury pool, because they knew that the truth, even with that liberal Democratic jury pool, would set you free. Would determine that justice is on your side, not the plaintiff's lawyer's side, trying to politically weaponize family grief for their personal and political profit. And that's what they couldn't have the world know, and that's why they've gone to such great lengths to strip you of your right to your day in court.
Robert Barnes, I've got a few clips I want to play, but there was that whole exchange with me and Maddie. The full thing hasn't been put out on Twitter, but it's like 5 minutes long where he's screaming at me, he's yelling at me, he's freaking out, and I call him an ambulance chaser. He doesn't know what to say. Why is everyone, even on their side, saying this was such a disaster for them?
Because there's a tactical way to approach this. In other words, you know, if he was motivated by protecting the interest of his clients first, then that's a very different one, there's really no relevance to your testimony because at this point it's only about compensatory injury, right? So even putting you on the stand is about grandstanding political theater by the plaintiff's lawyer for his personal political profit, not for the gain and interest of his clients relevant material to the trial. So that's part one. But part two is his approach would focus on whatever injury he believes that they have suffered and discussing those issues with you. Instead, he's talking about, you know, your views on a whole bunch of topics. Your polling on whether things might happen, whether maybe a false flag event before the midterms. He's asking you about other products you do. He's asking you generic products. He's trying to misattribute and misallocate blame by trying to blame you for the actions of third parties you have nothing to do with. Also trying to pretend that InfoWars is successful or got any level of public support from Sandy Hook. Everybody who follows InfoWars knows that's false, knows that's always been false. Sandy Hook didn't make money for InfoWars. Sandy Hook cost money for InfoWars. He knows that. So he's got to try to hide and lie and grandstand. But because he's dealing from a deck of deceit, he cannot come across as a credible, authentic, truthful voice in the courtroom. And that's why he continued to look bad, is because he was unable to trap you. He was unable to provoke you into the caricatured response they imagine you are. And he was unable to get away with constant lies in the manner and method in which he made his presentation. And as he couldn't get away with it, in his grandstand vision of this political theater where he's the hero at the end of the documentary in the film, he lost it. And that's why people watching are like, hold on a sec. I thought this was about parents. I thought this was about emotional injury. I thought this was about undisputed dishonesty. I'm not seeing any of that. I'm seeing politics, 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 theater, 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 because that's, in fact, what the plaintiff's counsel has always been about. They have used these parents for the gain of the political class with which they are aligned and the political causes with which they are assigned. That's the reality of it.
I want to get into Matt Gaetz. I want to get into COVID and their ongoing forced inoculations failing around the country. I want to hit the Russia escalation. It's obviously the central big point here. But in a few more minutes of this, why did Democrats in the deep state not think 2, 3, 4 steps ahead? Or are they? Because like fat people at a buffet, they did 3 trials. One's already happened in Texas. One is in the middle right now in Connecticut. Another in months here in Texas. And the longer they run show trials, it's one thing to run one. People's already questioning. Now they're really seeing it's rigged, and everybody realizes they're being conned, so they're paying very close attention now. By the third one, everybody's going to know it's rigged, and it's going to blow up in their face. I mean, that as a layperson, that's what I see, Robert.
Oh, exactly. And it was, you know, when I was telling people for months that these are show trials, that these are based on a fake narrative, this is a fake case. And it's a fake case because it's a narrative that's false. It's a narrative that's fictional. It's a narrative that was never true. InfoWars didn't stalk anybody. InfoWars didn't send people to stalk anybody. InfoWars didn't even talk about almost everybody suing ever. InfoWars mostly was a critic, as Paul Joseph Watson, the editor during this entire time frame, was a critic of the Sandy Hook denier movement. InfoWars was a restraint on the Sandy Hook denier movement. The InfoWars made no money off of the Sandy Hook denier movement.
We had debates. We had on-air debates on who was right.
Absolutely. Indeed, people were mad at you, calling you Beau Bridges, saying that you were fake because you were critical of the Sandy Hook denier movement for so long and so often, and so many other people were at InfoWars. And the reality is the reason why that people went to conspiracy theories in the denier movement was because the politicians in Connecticut were covering up their complicity and culpability in the inadequacy of school safety. That's why they're destroying the school. That's why they're hiding information from the Sunshine Laws. That's why they're not producing information pursuant to Freedom of Information Act or Open Records Act requests. That triggered a lot of people's conspiracy theories. They end up being wrong in their conclusion, but there was, in fact, cover-up taking place by the political class in Connecticut, and the only case the Connecticut courts didn't allow to go forward was the one that exposed the schools for inadequate school safety. They allowed $73 million shakedown of a gun manufacturer's insurers, and now they're allowing another effort to...
And by the way, the judge bars me from letting him know about that. Here's the clip that Cernovich put out. He said he's a lawyer as well. Courtroom drama you won't see in a show, and this is real. Here is just part of the meltdown of Chris Matting.
That's the real Robbie Parker, isn't it?
I mean, I said years ago, I thought Sandy would have.
Robbie Parker's sitting right here. He's real, isn't he?
Yes.
And for years, you put a target on his back, didn't you?
Objection to the form of that, Judge.
Well, I mean, I
didn't you?
I've said his name. It's true. I haven't said other people's names, but here they are.
You put a target on his back just like you did every single parent and loved one sitting here, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
That's argumentative. There's no, it's speculative. There is no foundation for it, and it's inappropriate to
These are real people. You know what I mean?
I think you just told them to move on.
Just like all the Iraqis, but you liberals kill and love. It's just, you're unbelievable. You switch on emotions on and off when you want. It's just ambulance chasing.
Why don't you show a little respect? Objection, Judge. I think that you get what you give in this courtroom. Objection.
You have families in this courtroom here that lost children, sisters, wives, moms.
This is a struggle session. Are we in China? I've already said I'm sorry hundreds of times, and I'm done saying I'm sorry. I didn't progenerate this. I wasn't the first person to say it. American gun owners didn't like being blamed for this, as the left did, so we rejected it mentally and said it must not be true. But I legitimately thought it might have been staged, and I stand by that, and I don't apologize for it.
And don't apologize, Mr. Jones. Please don't apologize.
No, I've already apologized to the parents over
because
and over again.
We know you're
I don't apologize to you.
Objection.
Don't apologize to you.
You're going to do it again.
Objection, Judge. Objection.
No,
I'm
not.
Objection. Argumentative.
Don't apologize to you.
Well, it's hard for me to get a word in edgewise.
It is, but
because
I think there's client, one officer of the court and one witness and
so
an officer of the court heard the objection.
On, and I can't rule on your attorney's... Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me. I can't rule on your attorney's objection.
Understand.
He may have to...
And then she went on to act like my lawyer and me did it. What do you make of part of that exchange, Robert Barnes?
Well, the judge has shown a lack of judicious temperament throughout the proceeding. I think the entire case has been an embarrassment and a shame on the American civil justice system. This is a show trial that even the Soviets would be ashamed of. And the court has not maintained any control over plaintiff's counsel whatsoever. And that's why these things are happening.
Absolutely. Barnes, I'm getting this other clip ready. I keep giving your analysis.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what you saw in that proceeding throughout, you've seen attempts by the judge to not grant to grant objections made by the plaintiff's counsel without any basis being identified. Right. So for those folks out there in the law, you can't just say objection. You have to say objection, certain rule or certain evidentiary basis. She wasn't even requiring until this week a basis. The plaintiff's counsel would just get up and say objection, and she would just grant it, sustain it, but without any analysis, any argument, or even the legal basis being listed. It was just embarrassing. It was something like out of Idiocracy. The judge in Idiocracy has looked more fair and more impartial than this judge in Connecticut had. And it's because of the sort of political, partisan, professional class prejudice against populist and populist voices in America. That's also part of it. But it's also part and parcel of we cannot have these public tragedies and traumas be events whereby people use those for political partisan gain.
And let's be clear. And then say they're not political. Like they had this FBI agent, never said his name, didn't know who he was. He admitted I never talked about on the show, never showed an image of him. But he's suing me, and he gets up there and attacks me and cries. Then they have a counterterrorism expert up saying I'm this mastermind Lex Luthor, but he's the guy actually involved in real psyops. It's just totally insane. The reason our information is powerful is we're saying drag queen pedophile time's wrong. Open borders is wrong. Fentanyl's wrong. War with Russia's wrong. The power of the propaganda is true. the power of the information is people agree. I'm just a regular guy who gets on the air and covers news, and that's what they're afraid of because I'm not taking orders from them. Here's another clip with your big hit partner with your syndicated show, Viva Fry, saying, I'm watching Alex Jones' testimony from yesterday. What is going on is truly making a mockery of the judicial system. This is a key clip. Here it is.